the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Thanks for being with us. It's a good Thursday. It's the opening of the NFL season tonight, Kansas City and Detroit. We will have John Wilner with us today, all things around the Pac-12 as we look towards week two of the season. Also, Bleacher Talk, the show that is gaining steam by leaps and bounds with Claudia Collins, Jordan Spurgeon, Coop, Bruce Cooper, and more. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their ongoing support of what we do and all of our partners for that matter. As you come into sports360az.com, you'll watch us here on the stream. You see our television shows on both Cox and on Bally Sports. And you check out the website. Our partners are what make us go. We are self-funded. We appreciate their support through the years. We're coming up. We're coming up on year 11. Year 11. Iron Man has been with me, I don't know, a couple of weeks. Jared Nielsen, chairman of the board. If anything goes wrong with the show, it's Jared's fault, and he's been with us for many years now. Let's start here. I am so excited for the college football weekend. Like, yeah, I have my fantasy football team. I'm not going to sit here and bore you with my fantasy football stuff, but just so you know, yeah, I've got some bets. I've got my app. I have some fantasy football players, and I've got a team. It's year 33 of the same guy and I doing fantasy football. He's out in Carlsbad. And we do that for fun, but like the Cardinals game on Sunday at Washington, they're supposed to get steamrolled. The NFL, in my opinion, scheduled the Cardinals at Washington because they knew that there would be a new owner and they want to assure a victory. And what surer way than to put the Cardinals opposite the Commanders? And how much longer will they be the Commanders? That's going to change. Their ownership group has Josh Harris and Magic Johnson, among others. So they've got star power all over themselves. And the NFL wants them to win this game. That's how it works. If you don't think that's how it works, I'm sorry. I can't help you on this one. Tonight, Travis Kelce play. Travis Kelce not play. It's week one. We will see Kansas City play games in January. So why would they play Travis Kelce if there's any question at all? Why do that? And these games, just so we're really clear, these games in September usually are unpredictable because most teams are not ready for the season. Most teams, Kansas City is not one of them, but most teams don't play their starters, if at all, or very little, in the fake football in August. So the games in September are usually garbage. And by the time we get to around for middle of October, it's like, this is a pretty good product. And then by the time we get to December, when the players are healthy and just trying to stay on the field, it's a really good product. And that's just the facts. The regular season in any sport, look at the NBA. They're trying to recreate interest or get interest in November and December games by having this play-in tournament. I have it, like having this little tournament, just like soccer does. Nobody wants to rip on soccer. I don't know. I think relegation would be pretty cool in the NFL. A team like the Cardinals couldn't go through Tankapalooza. If the Cardinals decide they want to tank, well, they've decided, but if Caleb Williams does not want to come to the Cardinals because he's too well to attend, and there's people that'll be like, oh, well, he just doesn't understand how much money he's leaving on the table. No, you don't understand how much money's out there, not just in NIL, but in endorsements all over the place for the first person or people who decide, you know what, I don't need to go to the NFL and play for a team where I'm going to get my head kicked in. Like, you know, Eli Manning is hated. The person I sleep with for these last 34 years hates him because he didn't want to go to the Chargers. Archie Manning did go to New Orleans, and what happened? He got crushed. He just got obliterated. Think of quarterbacks who are all that coming out, and they end up going because, well, you have to because it's, well, the draft, oh, it's okay, this is the way it goes. Caleb Williams has an extra year. He could stay at USC. And by the way, just so we're really clear, the college football weekend is much more fascinating and energy-driven to me than the NFL this weekend. Like, you've got Colorado at home against Nebraska. Deion has just been a breath of fresh air. Whether you like Deion or you don't like Deion, the fact that Deion Sanders is doing what he's doing and proving all the doubters wrong, The fact that Deion is doing what Dabo does not want to do. Let's look at Clemson. You want to be that Clemson fan today that lost to Duke because Dabo doesn't want to play around in the transfer portal? And Deion turns over his whole roster, so of course there's the outrage and the this and the that, and then Deion in full bravado afterwards shoots it right back. Yeah, when Deion loses a game, how is he going to handle himself? Is he going to not talk? Is he not going to try to explain? This isn't media crying. It's just kind of you look at it and say, you know, if Jonathan Gannon doesn't want to name who his starting quarterback is until the last minute because he thinks he gives his team an advantage over the Commanders, it's a first-year coach. Like, fine. Ooh, we don't know who the Cardinals are going to put at quarterback. We don't know if it's going to be Joshua Dobbs. I mean, seriously, are you hearing yourself? Are you looking at yourself in the mirror like gamesmanship? Do you really think that means that is it going to be that big of a difference if the Cardinals don't send out Clayton Tune versus Joshua Dobbs in week number one? No, can the offensive line push around the Commanders and can James Conner get into the end zone a few times? Because you don't see the Cardinals scoring a ton of points. I don't. Anyways, I drifted over to the NFL. The college side, like this is put up weekend. I think this is a litmus test for where U of A football is. Jed Fish has done so many good things and so many smart things and has that program heading in the right direction. However, go to Mississippi State. They have never won in the SEC on the road, U of A. Never. Never. So I don't care if it's Mississippi State. I don't care. That's a program that's pretty darn good. If you go down there and you get stomped, well, just same old story. Go back. You'll beat UTEP next week. You'll be 2-1, and you'll meander around until we see if they can get to a bowl game. Beat Mississippi State. You come back. You're 2-0. National win. Probably going to start getting a few votes. A few. Nobody saw the NAU game, but you'll probably get a few. And it's a good question. Like, if you're an ASU or U of A fan, of course you're going to give me this answer. If you're going to play it right down the middle as we do, who's the first team that's going to get ranked in the AP football poll in our state? And what year will that happen? Not hating, just simply wondering. Is it going to be Arizona in 2026? Is it going to be Arizona State in 2024? I don't know. Do you? Oh, we're going to show them, you know, and all that stuff. So I feel like this weekend, like Alabama against Texas, if Texas goes to Alabama and wins, all of a sudden Texas is back. If Texas goes to Alabama and gets jack stomped, then Sark's going to be the, he can't win. Get him out of here. It's like Ryan Day at Ohio State. He's 0-2 against Michigan. It doesn't matter what Ohio State does these next several weeks. Like, fans were upset with their pedestrian, that's the right word, pedestrian performance against Indiana. And maybe Devin Brown, who was at Queen Creek High School, ends up being their starting quarterback. He went from Queen Creek up to Corner Canyon in Utah. I feel like the storylines in the college football front are plenty and many. Kenny Dillingham, Arizona State. Look, he's in a much different space than Jed Fish is. Jed Fish is in year three of getting this thing going the right way. Kenny Dillingham's in week two. And last week really was a weird week. Yeah, they struggled to get Southern Utah put away. They did. Try taking your team through a two-hour-plus delay. Try having your team sit there and try to get juice back up to play. Try having your team, I'm only going off what the coach said, having their laptops out doing homework because they had papers the next morning because the delay was so long. Anomaly. Scrimmage. Oklahoma State comes here, may beat the tar out of ASU. ASU may give them a competitive game. ASU may win. To me, all the way around, I'm not going to sit here and jump up and down one way or the other on Monday on game two of the Kenny Dillingham era. It takes a lot to turn the Titanic around. That's a fact. That's a fact. When you're, I think it's now 51-48 since 2014, that's the Titanic. You know, you're taking on water. You haven't sunk, but you're just meandering along. What else? Oh, the Diamondbacks are in Chicago. So weekend set, four with the Cubs. Cubs and Diamondbacks are right there going for the wild card. And they release Nick Ahmed. Nick Ahmed, see you later. Thank you for playing. They call up Jordan Lawler. I like this move. I do like this move. Nick wasn't playing much as it was. He wasn't. And he was a great defensive shortstop. But when you have someone who's knocking on the door and you're making a push, whether they make the postseason or not is not going to come down in all likelihood to a ground ball hit to Jordan Lawler and he boots it. Is it just him being here and being around it? Is he going to get meaningful ABs here in the next 3 weeks? They're trying to make it to the postseason. You know, they've called up Ryan Nelson to start today in Chicago. This is a big, the fact the Diamondbacks are rolling with some of these young pitchers, and Zach Gallen's not been good lately. Merrill Kelly keeps getting leg cramps, and yet here they are hanging in. They're right there. So there's interest and there's intrigue all around what they're going to be doing this weekend. And I think that's about it. John Wilner. Johnny and I chopped it up early. We will bring that to you. And then we'll have Bleacher Talk with Claudia and Spurge on the high school platform. I'm Brad Susmat. John Wilner is with us. Wilner Hotline into the regular season of college football. There is no preseason other than this to yap, 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 yap. And John and I spent a lot of oxygen talking about Deion Sanders. Wilner Hotline, of course, you can find his content. Follow John over on Twitter at Wilner Hotline on social platforms. And, of course, here on sports360az.com. A lot to get to this week. Let's just start with Deion. Were you surprised?
A little bit surprised. You know, I'm not sure how good TCU is. But certainly Colorado was able to execute at a level that, you know, I would not have expected given everything that's so new. To me, the biggest development was that Colorado was pretty good on the line of scrimmage. I mean, their defensive line was not, but their offensive line held up pretty well. And that was, to me, the biggest question and remains the biggest question about them going forward is they're going to hold up front with all those new guys. And if they do, you know, they got a chance to have a decent season. Now, I'm not ready to say, oh, you know, Deion's got the whole thing figured out and he's got to turn around. But certainly they are starting off at a higher point than I think many of us would have expected.
Okay. His stuff going after media, I don't know if most fans care about that. It's fine. I think you put it succinctly on social. Like, if you lose, you're going to be the same way. You're going to answer questions, win or lose. And I think that's fair. Did your Heisman Trophy vote get decided before we even got through the week? I was going to put that on my social. Like, I think I know who I'm voting for. One game. But you actually have two players now on CU that should be on Heisman watches, right?
You should. I mean, Shedeur Sanders was very good at quarterback. Travis Hunter was just phenomenal. Right now, this is the former number one recruit in the country from a few years ago, a cornerback who signed with Deion at Jackson State. So the fact that the guy is a super talent is no surprise. The fact that they lined him up at receiver and corner for the entire game and he played, I think it was 129 snaps in the heat and was very good on both sides of the ball, just incredible. Now, can he do that for the whole season and hold up physically? I don't think so. But certainly for one game, he was phenomenal. And they will probably, I mean, they need him more at DB than they do at receiver. So my guess is he plays full-time at DB, and they use him, you know, very judiciously at receiver over the course of the season. And, you know, what a great talent. So he certainly is on Heisman watches at this point.
John Wilner with us for a few minutes. No, I agree with you about Hunter and can he hold up. It was a tremendous story. I'm going to throw you a layup here, just lob it up in the air. What was your biggest takeaway on the field? We'll get to what happened in the ACC with Cal and Stanford. What's your biggest takeaway from on the field after the first week?
That the Pac-12 lived up to the hype of this most hotly anticipated season, right? I mean, even before it became the last season, it was incredibly anticipated. Five ranked teams, all these quarterbacks, and yet it probably exceeded expectations, right? Pac-12 has not lost a game. If you include USC's week zero game against San Jose State, Pac-12 is 13-0. That is a record, a major college record for a conference after the first week. that nobody has ever had 13 wins and no losses at this point. It is the only conference that didn't lose a non-conference game, you know, on Saturday. So certainly it looks like it's going to be very good. The bottom of the conference, you know, the ASUs, the Stanfords, the Cals, certainly the Colorados, teams that finished at the bottom last year look like they're improved. So it's going to, it should be just a fantastic final season.
And final, because now the Pac-12 is down to the Pac-2. You have been all over this story. So let's transition over to that, and then I'll swing back into games this coming weekend. Stanford-Cal, how did this come to be, John, that they end up now in the ACC, and is this a good move for them? We'll get into Oregon State, Washington State, if you want to take that. The Mountain West, their commissioner, I was watching the Colorado State game. My son goes up there, so I was interested to see her comments. I mean, all in all, just put it together. What did you see, and how did it get to be with Stanford and Cal?
Well, Stanford and Cal were looking to compete at the Power Five level, and the ACC was the only option. It makes no sense, but nothing about this really makes sense. It's like the world has flown off of its axis. And I feel like there's a chance that it's like prohibition, right? Which lasted, I think, 13 years. At some point in the 2030s, things may come back around and we see a little bit more regional alignment. But right now, it is a different world. They needed a place at the Power Five. The ACC felt like there was some value in adding the schools and SMU. That the Big Ten was not an option. So that's where we are. Washington State and Oregon State at this point now are down to, you know, the Mountain West, some kind of deal with the Mountain West. Now, it could be that they join the Mountain West in a traditional move, just like Stanford and Cal joined the ACC. It could be that they work a reverse merger in which basically the Mountain West takes the Pac-12 name and brand and history and joins Washington State and Oregon State in the legal entity that is the Pac-12. That is an option as well, because that would allow them to keep the history, right? All of a sudden, San Diego State and Fresno State would have the history of, you know, Jackie Robinson and Lou Alcindor, right? So there's a lot of different ways this thing could end up playing out, but all of them end with Washington State and Oregon State playing in the same conference as the teams that are currently in the Mountain West. We just don't know what the legal entity will be.
No, I think what you brought up there is where I've landed on this. There is value in keeping the Pac-12 name, one. Two, the Pac-12 is part of the CFP. So all of a sudden, these schools are saying, well, no, we are the Mountain West. We're not going to go anywhere. Like, are you guys kidding me? Suddenly, yeah, you're part of the CFP, unless CFP powers are being come back and say, eh, Pac-12, get off to the side. So,
well, yeah, so that'll be a big issue.
Right. And so, John, we just talk about the value of the Pac-12 name, of not letting that be have dirt thrown on it and forgotten about.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of serious consideration going on, not only in Corvallis and Pullman, but across the Mountain West. Those schools, oh, well, we could compete under the Pac-12 banner. Gloria Navarez, the commissioner of the Mountain West, would run the new league. So they're going to see. And part of it depends on the assets that are available in the Pac-12, financial assets, right? If can those schools keep all the NCAA tournament units that have been earned by the 10 departing members? You know, what value is there in the Pac-12 networks? How much is in the emergency reserve fund? I think that's tens of millions of dollars. What happens to that, all those assets, if Washington State and Oregon State stay in the Pac-12 and don't dissolve the legal entity, open their doors and let all the Mountain West schools in? I think that there'd be access to a lot of money, but the lawyers and the financial officers are basically trying to figure all that out. That's why we're kind of in this holding pattern.
And do we go back to the present day commissioner of the Pac-12, who's just gotten his tail kicked left ways, right ways, and he ultimately is the decision maker on this, John, or not?
No, he is defanged, so to speak, right? He is He's still in charge, right? I mean, there is an entire sports season that the Pac-12 has got to operate for all the athletes and teams. Somebody needs to run the conference on a day-to-day basis on, from an operational standpoint. He's still doing that. He's not involved in these decisions about what's next for the Beavers and Cougars, what's happening with the Mountain West. He's not going to be a part of that. He's going to get fired. The question is, how much are they going to pay him to leave? I'm sure he's already negotiating his buyout. It's going to be a lot of money for the school, so that's a liability. And there's also liabilities that they've got to figure out as well in this whole financial and legal calculation. But he's not going to be running whatever new league emerges. He's not going to be in charge.
Okay, so who is then in the position of authority to make this happen? Is it the school presidents at Oregon State and Washington State holding the hammer over the entire Mountain West? Is that how this goes, John?
Well, I think so, but that's also part of what the attorneys are trying to figure out by looking at the bylaws. Are Oregon State and Washington State basically, do they comprise the board of directors of the Pac-12?
Right.
Are they in charge of the legal framework? Are they in charge of the assets? Or are all 12 schools currently competing in the league in charge as usual, right? What rights do the 10 departing schools have to run the conference? The lawyers are trying to figure that out. The bylaws are a little bit vague because it depends on how you define departure. And that's, they're trying to hammer that out. But certainly Washington State and Oregon State's presidents will decide where those schools go.
Yeah, that is fascinating, isn't it? I mean,
it's never happened before.
Yeah, no, it's okay. So you see it, you rebrand it and call it the Pac Mountain, the Mountain Pack. Do you keep just Pac-12? Do you dissolve the Mountain West? You have schools out there that will say, well, we want to be part of the Mountain West. We are smaller schools in those geographical regions. We don't want the Mountain West to go away because the Mountain West has a television contract with CBS and the Mountain West. So that's...
What do you do?
That's fascinating.
Do you add Gonzaga too? Do you join Washington State and Oregon State and also add Gonzaga and somebody else to get even bigger and improve your basketball brand? So there's a lot of things they got to hammer out. Right now, everything is in a holding pattern as the attorneys and financial officers figure out who's actually in charge and how much money is there. What's the value of the Pac-12 brand going forward? Because you keep all of the history if you keep that name alive.
Yeah, in the television markets, you know, Colorado State, that's Denver. What does Nevada exactly bring in terms of a television market, right? Like, you go through each one of these. San Diego State 90 days ago was in a completely different space than they are today. They got to be saying, you got to be kidding me.
Yep.
SMU becomes part of this. This is more of a national thing. You've written about it. It's been talked about. SMU could be a neutral site now in the ACC for games to be played. And so if I'm the soccer kid at Duke, I don't have to go to the West Coast, but I do have to go to Dallas. Stanford would go to Dallas. They play at SMU. Parents, family, friends would be like, what are we talking about? Whatever happened to home field advantage? That's a thing, right?
Yeah, the SMU as a hub, or Dallas as a hub for the new ACC for sure is the thing. I think Stanford, there'll be a lot of sports that Stanford and Cal have a lot. You know, they've both got 30, 35 Olympic sports. A lot of those athletes are not going to have to be schlepping back and forth across the country just because of the nature of their competitions. But for like the basketball teams, men's and women's basketball teams for Stanford and Cal, there's going to be a lot of back and forth going on. They can't play all the conference events at SMU at a neutral site. But we're going to see the hub. I think that's going to be a thing a little bit in the Big Ten with the four West Coast schools creating hubs for events. That's certainly part of it. And it makes you wonder how far into Texas potentially would the new Pac-12 Mountain West be willing to expand if they want to go beyond 14 teams? Is it possible that they would dump some teams like a San Jose State, for instance, right? Is there any way that there could be a merger in which schools get left out, right? A Nevada, San Jose State. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Mountain West will, whatever it does, the 12 schools will do it together. along with Washington State and Oregon State, but there's a lot to play out. We've been doing this really since July of 2021, when Texas and Oklahoma left the Big 12 for the SEC. It's still going on, and it's going to keep going, because whatever happens out west is still going to take probably a few months to figure out completely. It's crazy.
I could go down a rabbit hole on a whole bunch more things on this, but I want to get to the games, and I'll get you out of here this coming weekend. So I'll go to the games here in state, and then you pick some off the board. I don't know how attractive Oklahoma State coming to Arizona State is for you. For me, it's, okay, Oklahoma State played three quarterbacks last week, including a Gundy, so who was the most successful. You have Arizona going to Mississippi State, which to me is fascinating, because Jed has turned this thing into appears to be the right direction. But you go into SEC country and you get jack stomped, come back home, and it's the same old Wildcats. Other games, or those two games, just talk about this coming weekend, if you could.
Well, this weekend is the weekend for the Pac-12. There are, I believe, seven games. There's only 11 games because Stanford's playing USC, right, in their traditional week two conference opener. There's 10 teams playing non-conference games. Seven of them are against Power Five opponents, right? You got Washington State, Wisconsin. You got Cal, Auburn. You've got Arizona, Mississippi State, ASU, Oklahoma State. Colorado's playing Nebraska. Dion's on big noon again. Mm-hmm. The biggest game to me, if I'm looking at it from the 40,000 foot view of postseason implications, is Utah at Baylor, because Utah's trying to get in the playoff. And they got to be undefeated. Even if Cam Rising's not playing, they need to go to Baylor and win that game to stay on track. If you lose in non-conference, it's awfully hard to get to the playoffs. So I'm looking mostly number one, Utah at Baylor, but also how's Cal going to hold up at home against Auburn? How's Arizona going to hold up at Mississippi State? Right, the games against the SEC are always super intriguing.
Good stuff there, John. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate the time as always. There's John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. Find his content on sports360az.com. And, of course, give him a follow on Twitter. He's part of the Canzano Wilner podcast as well. And we're back with more after this timeout.